It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, as Coffee's got the night off. Although I did get a prediction from him, 56-10 is his prediction. I don't think I'm going to go there just yet, but you know, I am kind of curious, Ed. What, you know, obviously they're on a roll. They're playing really well. You know, there's probably half the fan base that's holding their breath, like, oh my God, can we keep this up the whole season? Or maybe mostly everybody's in that mode. Or is there going to be some, I don't think we're in for a Miami-type drop-off game, but you always have that game where things don't seem to click. And in 2012, it was Pittsburgh. We pretty much statistically owned them that entire game, but we coughed it up three times. And I don't think they turned it over at all. And lo and behold, without that, a 35-yard missed field goal? I mean, it's a totally makeable field goal. That season doesn't even happen. So, I mean, do you think it's possible that it's this game this Saturday, or do you think it's maybe further out?
You know, Pitt always concerns me. They've sort of had you know, sort of the mental makeup, sort of the no fear makeup that's caused Notre Dame a lot of problems through the years. But I have to say this does feel a little bit, and maybe I'm not, you know, in the 46-point camp that Mike Coffey is, but one of the things that I really am beginning to appreciate about this team is sort of the way that it's played in the second half for the last 3 weeks. I think we kind of forget, you know, that they got off to fast starts against Michigan, you know, Ball State, Vanderbilt. I think they scored on the first three drives, or the first drive in each of those three games. And then they didn't score on their first drive against Wake, but they played, or maybe they did. I don't know. But all I know is that they were in relatively close games the last 3 weeks. Certainly Stanford and a one-point game last week. By the way, I was in Blacksburg and sat with Steve Roboto and his son Vince. And
I didn't know
and
that.
And Vince is a huge Virginia Tech fan, which is hysterical.
Well, that's great.
So you know, I guess we can blame this on Steve's wife Colleen and her brother Butch, who grew up in South Bend, is a USC fan, and now that seems to have translated into Colleen's boys, who are anything but Notre Dame fans. Oregon, Virginia Tech, Auburn. There's really something wrong over there. So
it's definitely wrong when kids don't grow up Notre Dame fans. There's a real problem.
but thank God Steve and I were smiling by the end of the night, and I think poor Vince had to drive home from Blacksburg all by himself. And Steve could just sleep in the passenger seat because of the outcome of the game. But anyways, it was, you know, but the second half of these last 2 weeks does sort of give you the idea that if there is some tightness, if Pittsburgh does put up a fight in the first half, that Notre Dame is completely capable of making some adjustments and putting the hammer down in the second half. So, I think that this does shape up to be, you know, first of all, a confident team. Now, listen, there's a lot, you know, they've got midterms this week. They've got a bunch of stuff, you know, a little bit of a letdown because there was such an emphasis on playing at night at Virginia Tech and not laying an egg like they did against Miami, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems a fairly good mix of maturity and youth. So, you know, I think all signs, you know, and they're at home. I think the signs point towards, a kind of a similar type game of the last 2 weeks where, you know, Pitt sort of hangs around, and now we just have to see if Notre Dame has gas in the tank for the second half, if it is close at halftime. I do think that statistically though, this does not shape up to be a pretty good Pitt team, and they've had some key injuries this week to some defensive guys, and their defense wasn't, you know, they, I mean, they gave up a ton of points. They've given up a ton of points this year. So I think Coffey, you know, who's been very good with predictions so far, is probably not going to be too far off. I'll say they score 45 again this week, and give up 16.
Yeah, well, I'd take that all day long. I'm a little bit worried about Pittsburgh, only like you say, just because they've got a history of playing us tough, and it's a good time to catch us, I think, just in terms of, you know, two big huge games, especially with, like you said, all the emphasis that was put on Virginia Tech. There's bound to be a little bit of a letdown, a little bit of a hangover, I think, and you know, add to that, they got midterms this week. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we come out just a little bit flat. But I think I tend to agree with that. I think it is just going to be the start. I do think that we'll bounce back. We'll make our adjustments. And not only that, but I do think Book is for real. I think we're at a point now where we can confidently say that this wasn't some sort of aberration that he just kind of got lucky on a few reads here and there. I do think about the only thing you can probably knock him on right now is he does seem to struggle a little bit with the long ball. He's had a couple opportunities where he's missed guys, and one of them was not his fault. Boykin gave up on the route. I don't know what he was thinking. But there's been several, not several, but a good three or four where he had the guy with a step and just couldn't put it in. And for whatever reason, it's about the only pass he seems to have trouble with dropping right in the bucket is the long deep ball, for whatever reason. But in any event, hopefully that's something he can correct. But, you know, I just think with as long as Dexter is Dexter and Book is Book, I cannot see Pittsburgh hanging with us, especially once we get into the second half. And as you said, I mean, they just lost their best defensive middle linebacker, who was the overall best defensive player on the team, who's now out, I think, for the season. So not good for them coming into this. And therefore, I think, you know, after we get our feet wet a little bit, we should pull away. I'd probably say the same thing, but for some reason, I think they're going to put up, you know, I'm thinking more like 42-23. But I do think they're going to pull away, but it might be a little bit close at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, Book's decision making has been really good, and I think we can probably count on teams playing Notre Dame very similar to the way that Virginia Tech did or tried to do, which is, you know, they completely took away the run in the first half. And you know, maybe that's, you know, they're going to try and dare Book to beat them deep, depending on how good their corners are. I think Pitt has at least one pretty decent corner, but you know, that's where, I mean, you know, if you really want to look at sort of, it didn't quite happen, but you know, if you want to really look at sort of the way the game could have been a little bit less close in the first half last week, it was really Chris Fink. I mean, he was getting open deep. And you know, they hit him once. I think that only ended up in a field goal. But he was in the clear a couple other times, and either got missed or overthrown. So, you know, they're a tough team to defend right now. They really are. Those big body receivers cause a lot of problems.
I think the thing that's Book is underestimated on in a big way, and you'd only know this if you're, you know, a Notre Dame fan watching Notre Dame every single week since he's taken over, but his decision-making is not limited to just throwing to the right guy. His read option plays are almost always to a T, you know, perfected. He's literally pulling at the right time and making the right decisions on his reads when it comes to that. And I think that is where he's real dangerous, because he's got decent feet. Now, he doesn't have Wimbush feet, but he's actually not bad with his feet. And he's able to keep defenses honest, I think.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, that's what opens up
I think he was pretty good at extending plays, you know, this little small sample size that we had last year. But I think one of the areas that he's improved in, and I know people have touched on this a little bit, but he just seems like a physically stronger athlete this year. And I've seen him shake off a couple of, you know, attempts to tackle him high. I've seen him break out a couple of attempts to tackle him low. And, you know, when you can do that, you know, and extend a play. I mean, the touchdown in the second half when Boykin got behind the secondary, you know, he moved, I think, if I recall correctly, pretty significantly to his left, you know, along the line of scrimmage and kind of, you know, I'm not sure he was directly responsible for maybe it was just a poor decision by the deep back. But he had, you know, kind of three guys between him and Boykin. He extended the play, moving laterally to his left, and had the presence of mind to identify that guy coming at him meant that guy had left Boykin, and, you know, kind of left him all alone. So, you know, I think his physical strength, his ability to move laterally and keep his head down the field, you know, he's gonna have some rough patches. He's definitely still a young quarterback, but his decision making, I agree with you, both in the you know, the zone read or run pass option, whatever you want to call it, as well as you know, his decision making on those short throws has really been excellent. And he delivers the ball maybe not with a rocket arm, but certainly with better timing and on schedule to give these big guys. I mean, you know, they had what, like 3 or 4 plays Saturday night where it was basically, you know, almost a lateral to Claypool, to Kmet, to Fink, and to I think there was another one perhaps to Mack.
And he, you know what he does is he gets it out there in a hurry, but he also puts it with the player in motion, you know?
Yeah.
I think where Wimbush was struggling is he was throwing it low, behind him, you know, all that kind of stuff, and you just can't even get going. But, man, that is a huge threat when you can put it on a dime with the receiver moving forward on that lateral throw. But it shortens the amount of time that the receiver's got to sit there and focus on the ball.
Right.
He gets it in his hands, he goes, and the blocks are set up. And all of a sudden, that play goes for 7 yards. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge weapon.
And then you can let their athleticism take over. I mean, the play Kmet played made to basically run in between, you know, to kind of split two defenders. Kind of, I really thought that it was going to be a 3-yard play, and it was a 9-yard play, or maybe it was even a little bit longer than that. I don't know if you remember that, the one, you know.
No, I did. Yeah. No, I know exactly.
And
what you're talking about.
That was a really athletic move to get in between that traffic and turn that into a 10-11 yard gain. It was just kind of a glimpse of his potential. He's had two glimpses now. You know, the catch that he made against Stanford, sort of, you know, basically taking the ball away from the guy in the seam. You know, going up pretty high up in the air to get it and coming down with it. And then this play this past Saturday night, you just sort of start drooling a little bit when you kind of see, you know, him showing those traits that look very Tyler Eifert-ish. I can't believe I just used the word traits. You know what I mean? He really looks smooth on those two plays. And I think it's just the tip of the iceberg with him. He's going to be an NFL tight end. I think Mack could be too, but I think Kmet is just tailor made for kind of the you know, the guy with the Chiefs, the Kelsey, you know, the you know, the Cook, the guy for the Raiders. I mean, some of this crop of tight ends now that sort of are almost, you know, hybrid wideouts tight ends. That just play with great power and great finesse.
Yeah.
So,
and I think the way we've been lining them up, and even I happened to look at the Pittsburgh press conference transcript, and their coach was mentioning that you know, it's difficult when you got tight ends wearing the number 80 or in the 80s, and they're white, they're spread out, and you know, you almost lose track of who's a wideout and who isn't because all of our receivers are so big. I think that's just, you know, a testament to the quality of play that you're getting out of your tight ends. Where I think, you know, just throwing them the lateral pass is something that you don't often see a lot. But you know, I think adding to that, and this is where I think Notre Dame is just really tough. You get a guy like Dexter Williams back there, and when you start to click on those quick outs, those quick laterals, and when Book is reading things correctly and making good decisions in that option, boy, it only takes one or two hits, as we know, with Dexter, and all of a sudden, if he finds a seam, you know, he's gone. And the opportunity for that seam is a lot bigger when you spread the field like that. You know, guys, just the play that you just mentioned, Book, you know, when he kind of went left, and I don't know if you'll remember, but on that play, he did take a hard step forward to the line of scrimmage as if he was going to run. So you can't blame the defense too much, because the guy did leave Boykin, but I think he was totally convinced that Book was going to run, and he had seen enough of Book running for 6-7 yards. And so he comes up, and then you got there's the decision-making of Book. You know, he just plants his foot, stops, throws it to a wide-open Boykin. And I... you just add all that up, and it's a lot of intangibles that come into play that really make us tough and difficult to defend. And so the chances that Pittsburgh's just going to be able to stop us in all three of those facets, you know, throughout the course of the game, I just don't see it if we're not turning the ball over. I mean, there's just no way.
Yeah. You know, I didn't watch film or do much research on, you know, Chip Long's last, you know, his year or two at Memphis. But you kind of get the impression that this is what Brian Kelly envisioned when he hired him, and that in Ian Book, Chip Long has really found sort of the trigger man that he really craved for the kind of offense that he likes to run. And you almost got to believe these guys when they say, you know, we could have scored 70 against Virginia Tech, you know, that we left stuff on the table, that, you know, we're just getting comfortable with, you know, and you're also seeing Chip Long really sort of kind of blossom as a play caller as he gets more confidence in his quarterback, sort of more confidence in his weapons. You see Dexter Williams gives him another sort of, you know, a whole nother tool, a whole nother toy in the toy box, you know. So I know it sounds kind of, you know, kind of greedy, but I think we're not even all the way there yet. You know, I think there's still even more to see. You know, we haven't seen, like, we really didn't see last week. I mean, I think, you know, people forget Tony Jones Jr. and Dexter Williams are both excellent pass catchers out of the backfield. You know, we're going to see a little bit of that before the season's over. Some really nice plays, probably in the red zone, you know, with them. We really haven't seen – have we seen like a true, you know, screen to Dexter yet? Not really, I don't think.
We haven't seen one yet.
Yeah.
But you're right.
We haven't seen,
both of those guys. Even Armstrong, I think, is, you know, once he gets back and he's healthy.
Yep.
I mean, you don't lose much between those three guys. But having said that, though, I am going to put my foot down again and say, you know, look, if you're Notre Dame and you don't give Dexter 15 to 20 carries on Saturday, you're crazy.
Oh, they will. They will.
I just can't imagine Pitt holding him 15 to 20 times. It's just not going to happen. And I think just the way that we mix it up so well, you know, he's going to get 5-6 carries in the first quarter, you know, 5-7 in the second.
And then hopefully they won't need him after that.
Yeah. And then the reality is after that, it's just to keep him honest. But the truth is that you add all that stuff up on the offensive side of the ball, and as long as we're not turning it over, that's a really tough team to defend against when you got a guy like Book completing 70% of his passes.
Yeah.
And he's got targets like he does. The one thing that Book has done pretty well, too, is he's spread it. I mean, it's not like he's throwing to Boykin, you know, 60% of the time. He's not. And I think that just gives him all the more confidence. And like you say, I think you're right. I think Notre Dame has not shown on offense what it's truly capable of by putting it all together just yet. And so I think that is, you know, it'd be nice to see that against Syracuse, just because I think you'll put them on their rear rearview mirror quick enough to where they're just not going to be able to score as many points.
Yeah, you know, on the other side of the ball, I mean, you know, the defense has not gotten off to great starts the last 2 weeks. You know, Stanford, you know, certainly moved the ball. And Virginia Tech really looked like it had our defense on its heels in the first half last week. So all credit to Clark Lee and their ability to adjust and come out with a little bit more fire in the second half of the last 2 weeks. But that kind of stuff can kind of, you know, that sometimes that can catch up with you a little bit. So I'd like to see sort of a little bit more sort of a little bit more energy and a little bit more preparedness or just a little bit better sort of performance from the get-go from the defense in the first half Saturday. I'll be curious to see sort of how they start, because I think that's the scenario under which, you know, this game sort of, I don't think, you know, Pittsburgh will have much luck stopping Notre Dame, but I think the way that the score can sort of get out of hand and we could see a steady diet of reserves in the second half is if the defense plays in the first half similar to the way that it's played in the second half the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, the tone is always set on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, that's how the game is set, is the tone of the defense and how they start. So, I mean, I think you're right. They're in need of that to have that strong start, especially against a team like Pittsburgh and being at home. But it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be a few things that'll play out Saturday that'll be interesting for us to see. And on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, I assume Hayes will be there. I mean, I haven't really heard anything other than it's maybe not going as fast as the recovery as they'd like. But for the most part, you get everybody back healthy. I just think this team, when they hold people under 20 points, I just cannot see us losing. Yeah. I don't care who we're playing. The offense is just clicking way too well right now to not be able to win a football game if our defense is holding them to less than 20. So in my mind, I'd love to see them start strong, like you said, but the reality of the matter is if they continue to hold people like they have been, I just don't see it. It's just not going to be a situation where we only put 17 points up on Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Well, the weather is changing in South Bend. It's, you know, it'll be, you know, upper 40s, low 50s at game time Saturday. And it's probably only going to, you know, I mean, I think, you know, it's sort of strange, but really, you know, this is the penultimate home game. You know, it's Saturday against Pitt and then November 10th, Florida State. And that is it for games in South Bend. So, you know, I think if Notre Dame's going to get tripped up, it's really going to be, you know, it's going to be this kind of crazy November schedule that they have, I guess, starting at the very end of October, going out to San Diego. Now, a lot of things sort of shape up their way. This does not seem to be a particularly strong Naval Academy team this year. I think, you know, the crowd in Evanston for the Notre Dame Northwestern game will probably be a 50-50 crowd. You know, Syracuse in Yankee Stadium, that'll probably be close to a 50-50 crowd. That still scares me a little bit, that particular game. And I don't care what anybody says. USC is a rivalry game. They may very well still have only one loss when we go out to L.A., and they'll play with nothing to lose, and it'll be a very strange situation where, you know, Notre Dame is perhaps playing for a playoff berth and feels – you know, game pressure for the first time in a month, and USC is playing fast and free and easy, and we know they have the athletes to compete with anybody. I don't think they have the coaching to compete with anybody. But there's going to be some interesting stuff before this is all over. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that what would be interesting is besides our game this weekend, is there's a lot of key games outside of us that impact us that are on our schedule. I mean, obviously Michigan and Wisconsin. USC is going to be up against Colorado, I think. And you know, we're going to need a couple wins here to bolster our resume.
Well, I really think it's pretty cut and dried. I don't think Notre Dame gets into the playoff with one loss, and I think they absolutely get in, of course, without a loss. So,
yeah,
to me,
I think it's absolutely.
Yeah,
that.
I think it's right. Pretty that it's kind of that simple the way things are shaping up with their schedule. I mean, it's hard to see how, you know. How they're going to be one of the final four teams, considering the schedules the other teams have, if they lose to one of the teams remaining on their schedule. So that's, you know, in a way that's sort of refreshing. I mean, that's kind of like it kind of takes the lobbying out of it. It kind of takes the guesswork out of it. It kind of takes a little bit of the drama out of it for Notre Dame. It's a very clear path with a very clear to-do list, and you can't do anything but approach it one by one, week by week, because it's sort of single elimination as far as if they want to get to the Final Four. So,
yeah, no, you're right. Well, I think that's the way you prefer it. You know, let the ball be in your hands. You control your destiny, and you know, win you're in, lose you're out. That's just unfortunately the way it's going to be for them. But all right, good deal. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.